Brett?
It's been one of those days so far.
Well, that's okay, I guess. Is that okay?
My son hit a deer last night, so I was on the phone all morning with the insurance company. I mean, it's pretty cut and dried. They haven't been difficult about it, but it just takes time. Before I actually get off the office, I had to pull off the road on my way in after the phone call with the insurance company to undo a trade. Because I didn't realize one of my accounts that on Friday had a resting violation, which basically means when the account first got opened, I wasn't aware they looked at it as a violation, but I can see where it is. All the money goes in, do the trades. Later in the day, we bought an additional stock, and I didn't think to sell the ultra short bond fund where we were kind of parking all the excess cash. So it looked like, and I guess was, where I bought and then sold before settlement date on the fund to cover the trade. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just kind of.
And I didn't realize that when you have a resting violation or a red flag, you have to remember it. Our system doesn't stop you from doing the trade. So even though that seems a little ridiculous to me, that I have to remember, you know. They said, well, it has a red flag. Well, lately it seems everything has a red flag.
Right.
And most of it doesn't affect anything. So anyway.
So did they have to...
I'm going to have to bust the trade from Friday, and then I will buy the stock back again tomorrow. The catch is that he has to have, because of my mistake, he has to have cash in hand unsettled, or settled rather, settled cash in hand to make any purchases.
For how long?
90 days, which ends in, 3 weeks, something like that.
Okay.
So that's why Tracy isn't on the phone with us, just because she's correcting my mistake. Anyway, you're on speaker. Where do I sign? Here. And I saw she's okay with me buying it back tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay. And since we're busting the trade and it's worth less, it's going to hit my ear. Yeah. All right. So how was your weekend?
Mrs. Lincoln, how was your weekend?
That's about the size of it, isn't it? Well, not quite that bad. But
How's your son? Is he okay?
Yeah, that's the important thing. He actually handled it very well. So many times when you have an animal jump in front of you like that, you swerve to miss it and do more damage to the car and yourself by driving off the road.
No, sure. You can kill yourself.
I've always told him the idea is you put on the brakes, you stop as soon as, if you can stop, great. But you don't try and swerve too often to miss an animal because it's not like they're going over in a straight line anyway. They're going to make changes, and all too often you will swerve to avoid them and drive right into them. The most ridiculous thing I ever saw was my daughter swerving to miss a squirrel and almost lost control of the car doing it. And I was in the car with her, and I don't know if Kai was. I don't know if my son was at the time. But that was a good learning moment for her. Don't swerve.
Yeah,
actually, you shouldn't even change speed. Because you don't know what the animal's going to do. Yeah.
Right.
And it was a squirrel, for God's sake. I mean, you can feel guilty about it all you want. But I'd rather have you feel guilty than...
You swerve to avoid a deer. He was going to clear the car with a big leap, and you swerve and you smash into him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Years ago. Over the course of my lifetime, I probably hit 4 deer, I would think. Because you think about it, I've lived in Michigan, I've lived in Ohio, and I've lived in Pennsylvania. The deer populations in every one of those states is absolutely huge.
Right.
And So, but the scariest time, I didn't come close to hitting them. I would, do you know what a Miata is? That little roadster from Mazda? Well, when me and I first got married, we had one of those. And there were two accidents that I remember when that scared the hell out of me. One was a tractor trailer changing lanes where he did not see me, and he actually rubbed the fender down almost to the wheel, and I didn't even realize he was moving over because it was the lack of the noise. You know what I mean? Because you're driving by a tractor trailer with the top down, it's noisy. And I swerved and got out of the way. He never saw me. And then I thought everything was, and I was fine and everything was okay. But when I got home, I realized that he had worn down the fiberglass fender almost a full half inch with his tire. And another fraction, he would have hit the rubber of the tire. And that would have been the end of
You'd have
me.
flipped. Yeah, you'd have
Oh,
flipped.
and I was in a little dinky car that's, you could fit in my office, and that was a huge full set. So that, and the other time with that car, I was getting off at an exit ramp, and Rob, I'm not kidding you, three deer jumped over the top of my car, and I looked up and saw their hooves about 8 feet above my head. They were on like within the interchange, the clover leaf, they were within the middle of the clover leaf, and it was on a raised thing, and I looked up just in time to see all three of them jumping over the top of my car.
When you're lucky not to get a hoof in the face.
A hoof in the face, or and it was a rag top, and I did have the top down, and hell, they could have crapped on me for all I know, it would have been. But those are the two instances. And don't get me wrong, I love roadsters, and I love, but it makes you aware of just how defensive you have to be
Oh, no kidding.
when
I
you're driving.
agree. I had a
And I tell my son,
MGB. Yeah, I
oh
had an
yeah.
MGB, and then I had a bunch of little cars. I remember one of my guys in the office in Chicago said, "Rob, you commute every day on that Eden's Expressway. I want you to get a bigger car. We don't want to lose you."
Well, I don't think, yeah. And it basically, I've tried to say to my son, as like, because he gets stubborn, I would call it, when it comes to when he knows he's right. And that can be a great quality, but it can also be a great pain in the ass. I'm like, look, I don't want to put it too succinctly, but if you're in a crosswalk and I hit you, yes, you're right. You had every right to be there. But you look both ways because even though you have the right to be there and I'm supposed to stop, if I screw up, you're still the dead one. If I'm in a car, and I'll feel horrible about it, but you'll still be dead. That's kind of the way that I looked at it. But he talked, the learning moment last night was he goes, well, thank God you got insurance because this isn't going to cost anything. I'm like, wait a minute. That isn't quite the way insurance works.
Let me explain exactly what the net cost is going to be to this.
Yeah.
I'll
And
show
we
you
had
over
raised, it's
time.
funny because we had raised our deductible since he started driving. He started driving when he was about 17. And we raised our deductible because to offset the cost. And I figured, I want to be covered, so we raised it to $1,000. It used to be like 250, and that was pretty low. And the only reason we had that was we were like grandfathered with this insurance company since my wife started driving in, 1982 or whatever year she started driving. And so we made the decision at that time, you know what, we're going to save. Basically, we were saving $1,000 a year by raising the deductible $750. So the idea for me was this makes sense because it's $750 savings guaranteed every year. And sure enough, he hasn't gotten in any accident. Well, it was a hell of a weekend for him. Or let me rephrase it, hell of a break for him because since he's been home from college, he hit a deer with mom's car, and he
backed my car in and knocked the side mirror off. And
oh, no.
And it was like, dude, really? And
you know
what?
He's not driving, you know?
Well, that's it.
Cool.
And that's exactly what I told him. I said, the problem is, you know, over the summer you get used to driving because you're going back and forth to Knoebels to work. And, you know, you drive the car more, but then you go off to school. And even the drive home, you don't drive. You know, that's me coming to get you or your friend bringing you back or something like that, but you don't drive. And backing a car up, I said, the key thing is, and I'm trying to teach his younger brother this too, who isn't driving yet, but the answer to every question is slower. You know, if you're going to back up the car, do it slow. It beeps. It makes all kinds of noise when you're too damn close. Now, it beeps so much, it's actually in effect. You know what I mean? It beeps so much, you become used to it because it'll beep if it thinks you're close. Yeah. And guess what? Backing into a garage,
you're
close, and it starts beeping. And I make him do it. It's a little awkward because mine's a Volt, so I plug it in at night. So that's the reason it gets backed in. My side of the garage, I want to back it in so it's close to the outlet. You know, I can plug it in. If I just pull it in,
you can't.
I can't plug it in, which defeats the whole purpose of the damn thing. And so that's kind of where we've been sitting. So he's had one hell of a learning experience as far as this goes. And again, he thought, you know, how much is a rear, you know, a side mirror? And I said, well, this one is heated. This one is automatic. This how much was what did you think it was?
$420.
Yeah, yeah, including labor. That's not including labor to put it on. But, yeah, you're damn close. I mean, within a few bucks. And he thought it was, you know, $100. I'm like, no, pal.
Nothing for $100.
This has got the blinker on it. And that's what I tried to tell him, the general rule of thumb. When I was a kid, and I said it's probably still pretty accurate. You know, my dad used to tell me when I was a kid, if you can see the dent, it's $200. And I tell my kids, if you can see the dent, it's $1,000. That's what I tell him. And my dad looks at me as inflation, Dad. It's inflation. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, here's let's look at the deer accident. The grill's busted. That's $1,000. Front panel busted. That's $1,000. Side panel busted. You know, $1,000. Thank God nothing's wrong with the door. So this will be a $3,000 repair job.
Wow.
And he's just looking at me like, and I could see in his face. And I said, so we'll have to pay $1,000. And the shame of it is, it would be great if I could walk him through the whole process.
Right.
You know, hey, let's go, we'll visit the repair place. And he may be able to actually go watch it be, the estimate being done. But he's not going to, by the time you're able to drive it, thank God. Literally, everything's on it very firm. The lights still work. Everything works. Nothing's flopping around, so it is safe to drive. But he's not going to be in a position that he's going to be able to see the repair part of it. But that's kind of, you know, that's honestly, I told him, that's not a big deal. That's just dropping it off and picking it up when they tell you to. And then he asked me, he said, do we have a rental car? Because he was kind of excited that he was going to get a new. And I said, yeah, we're going to borrow your grandparents' car.
It's a rental car.
Yeah, well, and I told him, I said, you can get a package that has a rental car, and they'll pay for it. But usually, and I said, but we figure we got grandma and grandpa live in the same town with us. Now, if they only had one or two cars between them, then we would probably be in a position that we would want to, you know, get a rental. So we didn't impose on them. But they've got five cars. It's funny, too, because they live in an old neighborhood, like an old neighborhood where the house is on the street. You know what I mean? No garage. Everybody parks on the street. And I'm not kidding you. They've got four cars in front of their house.
Yeah, they got the whole street.
Yeah, it's thank God the house across the street is vacant or there'd be pissed off people everywhere. It is
really, so
if they weren't 80 years old, people would be giving them a hard time. You know what I mean? If they hadn't been, if they're not the the people who've been on that street forever, there's a group of them that have been there forever and they've known each other for years. And if they weren't part of that group, there would be a problem. Do you know what I mean with the number of cars? They've got two people and four cars and one parked down the street in a garage somewhere. That's the, and he wouldn't have a, he owns a lot of garages that he can park, you know, that he rents out to people. So he could, you know, forego the $50 a month he gets for his garage somewhere else. But it's, it is kind of funny how many, he figures out ways, like he's got a residential building that he's turned into, to was his offices when he was in real estate that he turned into apartments. And they've got this big parking lot behind him. And I said, well, can I park there? He goes, no, you can't park there during the week. And he goes, well, what do you mean? Well, there's this, the pharmacy in town is paying me for their employees to park there. So I get $25 a month for every parking spot. But that means you can't park there. I'm like, okay, how about if I go over here? No, that's in front of the garage. I got a tenant in that garage. That's $50 a month, so no, you can't park there. I mean, it's like he ought to be doing an income stream commercials, to be perfectly
right.
blunt.
So he's doing that like debit life insurance. He goes around and collects $25 from everybody every week, right?
I got to tell you, this was 25 years ago. I meet a guy who works in, he worked for the, there was a guy in town, it was McGee Carpet Company. And this company back in its heyday, you know, he'd deliver it with an armored car and a big Gatling gun on the top of it to protect the cash payroll. And you have pictures of it. But anyway, by the time I get in, what they do now is they make carpets for General Motors. And they're now, you know, been bought out and not really the point of the story. But I meet this guy who worked at McGee Carpet, and back in 1995, something like that, he was about 90 years old, and he had a pension, and it was like $24 a month, something like that. And you know where I'm going with this, don't you? And I kind of chuckle, and I say, that's a hell of a pension you got there. And he goes, oh, don't talk to me about that. And I say, well, can you tell me what happened? And he goes, well, some guy, you know, I was 18 years old when I started at McGee. By the time I'm 20, and so he's 90. So we're talking, you know, before 1920. Do you know what I mean? And he, to his credit, he kept his job during the Depression.
Yep.
Which, that's something to be kind of, anyway. Anyhow, so he says to me, I got some guy in a suit, and he looks at me and goes, kind of like the one you're wearing, comes up to me and says, have I got a deal for you? You sign this form, and when you reach retirement age, we will send you $24 a month. And I'm like, and you like that? And he goes, Red, I was only making a $50 a month working. So,
right.
He goes, some dumbass, this is what he says, came in here and told me he was going to give me 2 weeks' pay every month for signing my name here and doing some other thing. I said, I thought the guy was the biggest sucker on the planet because he didn't bother to tell me anything about inflation. And
70 years later.
Yes, 70, you know, when I start collecting my Social Security, when I start collecting it 45, 50 years later, I think, oh my God, this isn't even worth the stamp it's coming in on. But it was, there was that one, and then I had a client who, this was back in 90, I'm going to say like 96 or 97, and at that time she was still driving, and she was over 100. So she was born in 19. She was born in 1902, so I guess I got that wrong, because she was born in 1902. So whatever that is, 98, I don't know. But she was my client all the way up past 100. But anyway, so I did a full financial plan. This was back when they did the Merrill was doing financial plans for X amount of dollars. They call and I forget what they had, some fancy name, Financial Foundation. That's what they called it.
Right.
Do you remember those? So I did a full, did that, dove into her taxes, did everything exactly the way you're supposed to do. And we're going through the plan and everything, we're about to execute it. And she calls me up and she's in a panic. And she says, I forgot to tell you about my pension. And I'm like, okay, I went over all your taxes. I didn't see anything jump out at me. What are you talking about? And she goes, well, I get a war bride pension from the federal government.
Oh.
And I was like,
God.
And I said, oh, I said, how much? And it was like 28, 9. She told me, it's like, now this is, I'm looking at in the 1900s, I'm looking at a little old lady with no kids who's got $1.3 million, and she's talking to me about 28 bucks or $27 and some odd cents. So I say to her, a war bride? Because you know what it is. I didn't know what it was. I know what it is now. And she says, yes, I get a pension because my husband fought in the war. And I'm like, I'm doing the math. And I said, okay. So, your husband fought the Kaiser. You know, I figure she's 100 years old. By the time she was 20, he was a little older. You know, probably 1915, something like that. And she goes, the Kaiser? I said, yeah, from World War I. And she goes, oh, my heavens, no, Spanish-American.
Oh,
she was
God.
Collecting a Spanish-American war bride pension. All the way into the 2000s.
Oh,
can you believe that? It was awesome. And she taught me things that were just hilarious. First of all, she was 102 when she got her German Shepherd puppy, which I thought was the most ridiculous thing I ever saw in my entire life. Because she was this little bitty 100-year-old woman with a German Shepherd puppy. We used to meet... she'd either have sandwiches and ring a bell, and then her lady would come deliver the sandwiches. And then one time she goes, Rhett, I would like to take you to the club, to the Williamsport Country Club. And I said, oh, that would be wonderful. So we meet there, and again, because I did all this financial planning, I said, Helen, I don't see where you pay for this. You know, that's something you would have noticed, because at the time, it was a $20,000 membership due, you know, for the club.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, well, Rhett, most people don't know this, but after you've been a member for 50 years, they don't charge you the membership here anymore.
Oh, that's a great story.
And I said, so when did you join? She goes, my dad signed me up right out of high school. She'd been a member of this club since she was like 18.
She'd been a member for
90. By the time she died, she'd been a member of the club for over 90 years, or no, 80 years. 80 years.
And
that was the funny part, was she hadn't had to pay the dues since she was 68.
40 years.
But when she told me about the Spanish-American war bride, I about fell out of my chair. That's practically the same thing. She was also the one when we talked to when I she was my a client that I got involved in trusts, and she had a trustee in mind. That used to work at the local trust department for the local bank. And he was a schnook. I mean, he was not a good guy. And you knew he was sitting there waiting for her to kick the bucket so he could collect his 6% or whatever outrageous thing he was going to charge her. And you could see them waiting. You know, and...
Oh, they got their annuity lined up, yes.
Yes. And it was wasn't going according to plan because, you know, he was now 65. he was retired already. And, you know, I'm sure he was counting on this as income that, you know, he. But And I talked to her about, I said, what do you want to do more than anything else? You know, what do you want to do with this money when you're gone? And she says to me, well, I've always been in love, and we've dealt with German Shepherds. We raise them. We train them. I'm actively involved, and she still was. She was on the board of directors for the Lycoming County SPCA. And she goes, and I looked at her and said, so you're leaving your money to the dogs? And she goes, yes, I'm leaving my money to the SPCA. And I said, okay, that sounds great. I would recommend you do it in a trust. And she goes, well, no, I'm just going to leave it directly to the SPCA. And she rattled off the guy's name, the director. Robert knows what I want and what I think. So, you know, I trust him. And I said, and I looked at her and I said, well, what about John? And she goes, who's John? And I said, John's the director you haven't met who'll be in charge in 8 years. What if he wants to put gold hubcaps on all the SPCA vehicles? And she goes, you mean they could do that? And I said, if you don't establish some parameters for this money, yeah. And I said, how much does the SPCA need extra beyond what it needs every year? And she goes, we usually need an additional, we ask for money somewhere around $50,000 or $60,000 a year. I said, if you do this right, this $1.3 million can pay that $60,000 every single year in perpetuity, you know, with a 4% withdrawal rate or something like that. And so that's what she ended up doing. But I also said the other good news about it is if you don't mind this, the trust work is private. So there's no, because you ever been involved at a charity and the moment they get a big gift, everybody else stops giving to them because they figure they don't need the money anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You ever been involved? You know, like if you get Danville Little League, you get a government grant and they want the big picture with the $100,000 check, you know damn well you're not going to get another dime from anybody, you know, that you
right.
usually count on. And I said, the good news is the trust, there's no death. It's private. You know, they can start collecting this money and they won't hit them, and they can still go get additional funds elsewhere without having that be a big negative. Now, I'm not sure how that worked because Helen would have wanted people to know that she gave them the money. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? You got some people that want to be, but she'd want
okay.
a building.
Yeah, giving
oh yeah.
the money and not, yeah, and making it an annuity is okay. You know, that's not.
Yeah, and I said this way, one crazy person. You know, I'm not saying you put restrictions on the 40 or 50 grand they get a year. You know, that can go right into the operating budget. But it prevents some crazy person from stepping up and sidetracking it for everybody else going forward.
Sure.
And she goes, but anyway, so it was kind of fascinating. She was one of my favorite clients.
How many boards are you on?
Just one.
Which one?
I work Danville Area Little League.
Okay.
And it gets me well known around my community. I get to meet quite a few of the docs through the board. The bad thing about it, now that I've been more involved with it, is that it's, I hate saying this, but it's a lot more blue-collar oriented than you might
mm-hmm.
think. I'm not involved in Little League International. That's in Williamsport.
Mm-hmm.
They're a very large charity, and they also have the Lycoming Foundation that's up here that was one of the first, if not the first, community foundation ever formed. And there was a guy in the area by the name of Bob Shangra, and he was deeply involved in that for decades. And he pretty much ran, and they had, Rob, if they don't have $100 million, they haven't been doing something right. Do you know what I mean? They've got to have, I would guess, because they were the first, a lot of community foundations, when they get started and don't have the infrastructure to handle money, they put it with them for management. But I've never been able to get involved in that. There's so many financial people that have been involved with the Lycoming Community Foundation for so long. It's like, you know, traffic jam.
You have a good understanding of boards, though.
Yeah.
So
I understand what they want. I understand what charities want. You know.
Do you have do you have another one that you'd like to be a member of?
If I hadn't thought it through, but if I were, I would want it to be in and around Williamsport more, where I work rather than where I live.
Yeah.
But the one that I have been getting requests about is the Geisinger Foundation. But I haven't made up my mind about that because my personal experience with them was not good. This was years ago, so the boards changed many times since then.
Right.
But I remember there was an incident, and this probably has more to do with anything else, was with my wife. They said something kind of offensive, and they didn't mean to. My wife was took the responsibility of selling some of the tickets to their I forget what it's called. It's a big their gala. That was it. It's the, you know, all the doctors' wives and the docs get all dressed up and they go to this gala and they have this silent auction and it all goes to the Geisinger Foundation. Or something like that. No, that's exactly what it is. Anyway, and my wife agreed, she was part of it, and she agreed that she would sell the tickets, and she did really well, hit all their numbers, and then she couldn't do it anymore because, you know, she'd hit the numbers that they'd asked her to, but she did it so quickly, they still had like three more weeks left. You know, they said, we expect you to sell 100. Well, she did it in a week, and they said, well, can you keep doing it? And she said, I really can't. You know, the times change now. The reason I pushed it to get it done so quickly was because I knew my son will be home from school this summer. And because he's not at school, I won't have time. And this is our autistic son. And yep. One of the board members at the time said, is that your autistic son? Yes. Well, maybe you could take your retarded son with you.
Oh.
And you would generate a lot of sympathy then.
Oh, God.
And I said, please tell me she did not use the word retarded. And she goes, yes, she did. And I said, well, what did you do? She goes, I looked at her, and I handed all my stuff in, and I said, I am done, and walked out. And it's a shame that somebody was like that. And I found out a little bit more about the woman, and she was at the time, there was a group of doctors who came up through. They'd lived in Danville forever, and she was, let's say, in her earlier years, she married well. Does that make sense? She married a doctor above. You always hate to say the word her station, but she married very, very well, and her upbringing came out in. And she, the funny thing was, I said, "Did you say anything to her?" And she said, "It wouldn't have done me any good because." Rhett, she didn't know or think what she said was offensive.
Right.
No,
she did the right thing.
She didn't mean anything by it. You know, she didn't mean anything by it. She just, she thought that's what you called them. And it's like, I mean, it's hard to go, and, you know, within the autistic community and within the special needs community, if you are a parent, in some cases, depending on the story you're telling or what you're trying to info, you get the okay to use that word. But people not in the community don't get to use that word. Do you know what I mean? Somebody said to me, so how often do you use it? I said, never. I've never used that word.
Never. It's like the N-word. You don't use it. Even if you're one of them. You know, you just don't.
But the probabilities
of offending somebody are too great, right?
Yeah, yeah. My wife thinks that my time on the Danville Little League board should come to an end. And I ask her why, and she says, because you don't have any kids in the league anymore. And I said, well, that's not why I did it. I didn't do it. And she goes, don't you lie to me. You did do it because you didn't like the kids the coaching your kids were getting. And I said, well, that's why I started coaching. That's not why I joined the board. I joined the board because I thought I had something to bring, and, you know, we could start going after grants that we couldn't go, that we couldn't get before, didn't have the wherewithal to go after that we would, and sure enough, over the course, I mean, I've been involved with them over 10 years now, and through that period of time, we went from we're still predominantly a blue collar board, I would say. You know, we've got more mechanics and carpenters than we do well, we only got one financial guy, that would be me. But the other point of it is, though, we do get people from the hospital, we do get doctors, and the fact that we get a white-collar view on it means we were able to pursue and get grant money from the Degenstein Foundation, which is, I don't know, do you know who the Degensteins are?
No, but I just know.
Do you know what Wise's supermarket is?
Which supermarket?
Wise's, W-E-I-S?
Yes.
Okay, that's the Degenstein is the maiden name of Mrs. Wise.
Oh, okay, nice.
So, but, you know, so we got $25,000 from them. We got $30,000 from Little League International. We got $30,000 from the Geisinger Foundation. We started filling out these. We got $100,000 from the federal government. We got a $65,000 grant from CEDACOG, because most of Danville, believe it or not, is considered low income. So we use a whiny neighbor who constantly complained about the amount of dust that we were churning up to apply for a CEDACOG grant for $65,000 to pave our parking lot. And every year we get a tourism. Every year we get a tourism grant for $10,000 because we host the National Collegiate Softball Association, their club. Host their regional, so they all come in. Yeah, you're going to get me on track now, aren't you? You're going to bring this whole thing around where we've been shooting the shit for 45 minutes, and now you're going to bring it around and tell me how it's going to work.
Well, for one thing, you do what you're good at, and things. You should not give up your Little League Foundation. You own it. You're good at it. You matured it. And tell your wife that your coach is requiring that you be on two boards. And since you're on one that's already good and working, you have to stay on that one. And then you need to be on one more. And it sounds like the Geisinger Foundation is the next one that you should be on, even though she had a bad experience. That person's probably.
And I also can't decide yet. I haven't been able to decide whether they're interested in getting me on the board or interested in getting me to buy things or sponsor stuff. Because I'm not necessarily.
It's both. I mean, you're going to need to step up and pay them some money and do that stuff. But that's okay because, I mean, you know, you're swimming in the money when you're on a board like that. And you'll get money. You don't worry. It comes. I always figure I spend, you know, I've never given away money where I said, oh, that was really a waste of money and it didn't come back, you know, somehow. In some way it comes back and double or triple and life is good, right? So
yeah,
that's particularly in our business, you know, you bring in one $5 million
hey, when
client.
You bring, well, like I put on a seminar once that I thought was, but all it took was, it was an annuity, seminar on annuities, which was, this was early in my career, and all it took was one annuity sale to more than triple what I put out.
Right.
Doesn't take
so
a lot.
That's the game. You be generous and helpful, and they need people like you on there because you're very experienced, you talk the language. You know how to apply for grants. I mean, you have a lot of knowledge.
Well,
I
tell you,
you know what,
Rob. We got that CEDACOG grant. We had to get it awarded to us twice. You want to hear why we had it the first time?
The application was wrong.
No, everything was perfect. We were told by the Danville Town Council and the manager that we were getting it.
Uh-huh.
We at the time leased, from every year we would lease the Washies playground for a buck for our fields. And we would then take care of the fields. And that, by the way, thanks to our current president, we stretched that into about a 30-year lease.
Right.
And the reason we did it was because we were starting getting vibrations that they were interested in selling the property. So you don't make big improvements to your baseball complex when the fire company that owns all the land in the park is, you're hearing things that they're going to sell. Anyway, but so it's the Washies Playground. Washies is the name of the fire company. And they found out that we were getting awarded this grant, which they had also applied for a ladder truck.
Oh.
And which is, I think that's a $700,000-$800,000 piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, they came up to us, their board came up to ours and said, we want you to refuse this money so we will get it.
Wow.
And I looked at him, and our board looked at him and said two things. First of all, if we refuse this, it just goes back into the pool and they'll pick another person. It's another organization. It's not necessarily going to be you. Just because we're on Washi's Playground and you're the Washi's Fire Company, that doesn't mean you're going to get the money. Second thing is, when I looked at him and said, do you need a ladder truck? And they said, well, what do you mean? Because there are a bunch of blue-collar guys too. And I said, do you have you done the studies to show that a ladder truck is needed in the Danville area? Well, no, but so you want a ladder truck, but you can't show you need a ladder truck. And the president and I are sitting there saying this, and they said, well, yes, that's what we want. And they were insisting on it. And then the next thing I said, well, how much money do you already have for the ladder truck? Are you having a fundraising campaign? Are you doing so? Well, yes. Well, how much money of the 780 whatever thousand? They had like 10 grand.
Ah.
And I said, please, you have to understand the biggest purpose here is that you are probably not going to get the money if we refuse it. They forced us to refuse it. They didn't get the money.
Of course not.
The next year we put in for it, and we get informed, we get called down to the town, and they tell us two things. You're getting it awarded to you again, and the town manager says, you tell those dumb shits at Washies, if this gets rejected from you, you will never get another grant again. This is your grant. They are not going to get it. And by the way, he looks at me, he goes, they finally did the study. It determined there is no way in hell we need another ladder truck in Danville. I about fell out of my chair. But the next year we got that grant. And they didn't have to do that. That was very nice. It was very nice that, and it's because of the other things that we do. We inform. What? The CEDACOG?
Yeah. Can you get on that one?
No, that's government.
Oh, okay.
That's government. That's like, you know, your tax dollars at work. And they can, usually there's a chunk of money that gets sent into the municipality that, or the township, that allows them to, like, the one year, the year after we got, the year we turned it down, it went to a catwalk that connected low-income housing. A catwalk went across the main, you know, this kind of like highway-looking thing to the supermarket and back, so that they didn't have to. That was where the money ended up going to. And then the next year, something at the community center got purchased. And But it is kind of funny because we do keep track of that stuff. We've gotten, you know, we used Little League money. We get donations from banks, you know. And it's kind of funny because the moment Fulton Financial buys a scoreboard, the next place we go is Jersey Shore State Bank. You know, and we tell them, hey, Fulton just bought, you know, a scoreboard. You know, you probably want to be, you probably, you know,
yeah,
maybe Service First wants a scoreboard too.
Right.
Or something. And the.
All right. I got to run, my friend.
I know you do, man. But so that's that wasn't, I know this was nowhere near where we were supposed to be talking about today, but I'll work on that. I'll work on getting on that board. Hey, next week, though, I'm going to have difficulty the 20th. Can we reschedule that call?
Yep. Just tell them that you're out and we'll reschedule it. The 24-month calendar is the most important thing in week six.
Okay.
The 24-month calendar. I just had a team that's, you know, really, really wonderful team in Louisville. And they've been working with me for about a year. They said, okay, we made up our 24-month calendar. We're sending out the 12-month 2020 calendar to our clients, telling them what we're doing, what the calls are going to be about, and very excited. And one of the, you know, their first calls, you know, the outlook for the economy, but maybe the second call is on the new tax act. So the new tax act gives you a lot of opportunity to discuss with every client that has any serious
money. Amount of money at all, the new taxes. Yeah.
Right.
So that's part of what, for the 24-month calendar, what you're planning on discussing when you're with your monthly updates or monthly conversations.
Yeah, puts a little meat on the bones of what they don't know. You know, you're introducing them, you're going to do this 12-4-2, well, what are you going to talk about? Well, this gives it a little more meat on the bones. Besides,
and that stuff is in your white papers on the site?
Yeah, it's in chapter six in your workbook.
Okay, cool.
And you should be able to pick it right off of there, but add of course the tax act to what I have on there, as you know, substitute something out and put that in. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, sounds great. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, it was fun. Really fun.
Yeah, it was. All right, just remember, if you ever run anybody that says they got a war bride pension, you're talking great story, but not a lot of money.
I'm with you. War bride.
All right.
You mean the Kaiser? No. The Spanish-American War.
This was her quote. My heavens, no, Spanish-American.
And that was Isabella?
Her name was Helen. Helen Watson.
Helen Watson. And I got my pension for fighting Isabella and Fernando.
Well, what I didn't realize was her husband was like 30 years her senior.
Oh my God!
You know, it's one of those kind of marriages. You know, where he's 45 or whatever age he is, and you know,
he's
she's 19. Yeah, something like that. I'm sure that was great. Oh, the other thing was the art in her home. I'm looking up, and there's this nude painting, a painting that is, you know, what they call a nude. It is a naked woman, and then I'm looking at it. Rob, I swear to God, by the time I was done with that meeting, I was pretty sure, I'm 99.9% sure that's her.
Oh, I bet it was. Did you ask her?
Not a chance in hell. Not going to ask a 100-year-old woman if that topless painting is her.
That's me, baby.
Anyway, yeah, I'll talk to you later. All right, bye.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, Tom. All right, bye-bye.